Hello and welcome to the Fergan. This is episode 1 of the Fergan podcast, recorded on Tuesday the 25th of April. For those of you who don't know, my name is Dan and I'm here to comment on the state of the world from a heathen perspective. That said, this podcast isn't just for heathens or pagans, and I invite all open-minded folks to share an hour or so with me while I try to convey worthwhile philosophies. The focus here won't be on the academic. There are other podcasts and channels for that. Rather, we'll discuss the manner in which a heathen mind meets the modern world, the relationship between a heathen worldview, dissent, and disillusionment with the current system, and the ways in which heathenry can give us the tools to face it. My own perspective comes from a more practical angle, as opposed to scholarly. So what you'll find in listening to this podcast is a plethora of facts and names and dates and theories and references to academic works and things like that. My perspective comes from having tried to put heathen philosophies and a spiritual worldview into practice. Over the course of perhaps the last 15 years or so of my life. Before we get into what this episode is going to be about, if you'd like to support what I'm doing, I now have a website, which is simply fergan.com. That's fyrgen.com. And on there, you'll find links to all of the patronage websites that I have set up. So there's Patreon, there's Subscribestar, Substack, and a couple of others. So if you can spare anything to help me, then it would be much appreciated. So today's episode, I'd like to answer a very simple question. Why paganism? So at the moment, there are a lot of people turning to Christianity. This is due to the events of the last 2 years. You know, we have, there are probably those who believe that we've been through a genuine, a genuinely terrifying pandemic, who have turned to the God Jehovah and to Jesus Christ because they think that it's some kind of end time event. But more commonly, I'm seeing dissidents discovering Christianity, discovering Christ, because they have come to realize that there's a darkness that has come over the world. And that's not something I would dispute whatsoever. What I would dispute, however, is that Christianity is the direction in which Europeans should be turning. And I'll explain why as best I can with a kind of beginner overview in this episode. This isn't meant to be an attack on Christianity or the other Abrahamic religions, but it will nevertheless seem to be. It will seem as if I'm denigrating them because that is, that's necessary in the course of explaining why I firmly believe that we should be opting for paganism over Christianity. Paganism offers everything that Christianity does and more. The problem is that people don't understand paganism well enough to know that this is true. So this will be a basic beginner overview of why I believe that paganism is the faith, the tradition, the path that we should be turning to, especially those of us who are disillusioned with the materialist, increasingly technocratic, dire circumstances that we're facing. Now, I'm still learning all the time, despite having walked this path for over 15 years. So I'm not going to pretend to be an authority on everything, but I do believe that I have a good, a good scope of direct observation and practice, as well as a good network of friends and teachers who I've been able to learn variously from. Not all of them heathen, but some very good heathen, pagan thinkers. So it might help if I begin with my background so that you know how I came to be a pagan. So I'm 38 years old at the moment. I was christened at birth, even though my parents were and are atheists, or perhaps at a push agnostics. They christened me because my cousin was being christened and he was born about the same time as me. So they kind of, you know, jumped on the bandwagon. Throughout my youth, I was always fascinated by anything paranormal. I loved stories of, you know, various stories of ghosts or, you know, crop circles or, spontaneous combustion, things like that, you know, anything kind of weird and wonderful. So I was always fascinated by these things. As I grew up, as many children of my generation did, and obviously the current generations, I found atheism. You know, schools don't really nurture a very spiritual mindset in children these days, and everything's very empirical. And, you know, couple that with being a kind of rebellious youth who discovers things like punk rock and heavy metal and stuff like that, where everything is about turning against, you know, the societal norms. But in my teenage years, I fell in love with a genre of music called black metal. Now, this was really my first introduction to a pagan mindset. This was where I first really came to see runic symbols, particularly with a band like Burzum, who many of you may be familiar of the man behind that, Varg Vikernes, has become quite well known in dissident circles. And Burzum's music and imagery was always very heavily steeped in Germanic Norse paganism. So that was a big kind of wake-up call for me. It made me begin to reconsider whether I was really an atheist, whether I perhaps just hadn't found the right path. During that time period, I also discovered something completely different, which was Gnostic Luciferianism. Now, this was a spiritual worldview that was held and promoted by primarily by a band called Dissection from Sweden. I won't go into the details of that belief system, but it is quite interesting. It's not your kind of base level Satanism or anything like that. It's essentially Gnosticism, but with a kind of, you know, Luciferian veneer to it. It was probably the first time I'd really considered anything, any sort of deeply spiritual questions, because it posited things like, you know, are we immortal souls trapped within an earthly realm? You know, was this a deliberate ploy by some kind of, malevolent demiurge? And these were questions which resonated quite strongly with me. Then I was introduced to the works of an author called Graham Hancock. And through that, his book Supernatural introduced me to the world of shamanism. This was in the book, the shamans were those who found this other spirit world through, entheogens, through plant teachers, as they call them, through, hallucinogenic plants. But I sought to try and find my way to that spirit world through something a bit different. So I came across a book called Of Oak and Ash and Thorn, which was about Celtic shamanism. This was at a point in my life where I hadn't really realized that my identity was actually Germanic, being of English and Dutch descent. So nevertheless, this book had a pretty big impact on me, in the sense that it taught me how to enter this spirit world. And I had a very profound first experience where I encountered, other entities, or perhaps aspects of my own higher self. And it was, it was a pretty kind of formative event for me. From there, I combining that sense of spiritual, wonder and interests, combining that with a newfound sense of identity, I ultimately came to Germanic paganism, Anglo-Saxon paganism, through the works of, and this was helped along by the books of an author called Brian Bates, who wrote The Real Middle Earth and The Way of Weird, who really opened up my imagination to how my ancestors would have seen the world, the natural world, the spiritual world. And from that moment, I was hooked. You know, I realized that this was what really spoke to me. It combined everything that felt natural to me, this sense of kind of shamanic spirituality with my strong sense of identity, something timeless, something that was very, very deeply rooted within me. And from there, I began my quest to, I hunted down various books on the subject, various books by the publisher AS Books, works of by Stephen Pollington, Swain Wodening, Edred Thorson, Nigel Pennick, various works, and along with the Eddas and various other things, and I kind of threw myself into that world. And from that moment, I started calling myself a heathen, which is not a term that I have a problem with, but I'll go more into that shortly. For a few years, I practiced on a more solitary basis. This was based more on sort of meditation work and the kind of shamanic techniques that I'd picked up from Of Oak and Ash and Thorn. A few years later, I found a group in my country who I could meet with, who introduced me to new, even more fascinating concepts and broadened my horizons, so to speak. So that's my background. So what is paganism? I mean, that's an obvious question, and I'm sure many of you can answer that. So I'll just briefly skip over this, but we have, in amongst those listening out there, you've probably heard the terms Arcitru, heathenry, paganism, Odinism, various different terms, and again, those mostly apply to the English or Northern European Germanic tradition. Is there a difference between them? Not really. Different groups prefer to use different terms. I know that some balk from heathenry, or they don't, or even Odinism, they don't like those terms. I don't have a problem with heathenry myself. Our ancestors wouldn't have had a name for it, because it would have just been their way, and it was intertwined with every other aspect of their lives. So there wasn't anything for it to be in conflict with, for it to need to assert itself by having a name. I would say probably the primary feature of paganism is ancestor worship. Yes, it's nature worship, but there is a strong emphasis on the ancestors, to the extent that the line between ancestors and the gods is blurred. So really everything that upholds the principles of the pagan worldview is informed, is determined by our respect for our ancestors. We hold the same principles that they held. We interact with the world, or we seek to interact with the natural world in the same way that they did. We honor them because we believe that there is an aspect of their energy which still exists. We seek to, you know, communicate with them at the high holy tides, at the festivals of the year. In addition to that, we have a very cyclical worldview. So we pay very close attention to the seasons, and this is because our bond with nature requires us to have a close bond with the seasons, because we need to, in order to extract what we need from nature and to give back what nature needs from us in terms of our respect, we need to know these cycles. We need to know when spring is blooming. We need to know when the sun is at its highest and when it's at its lowest, because we believe that by honoring these natural entities at these times, that we can help to perpetuate the cycle, and therefore our descendants can continue to learn. We can continue to grow. Paganism is not evangelical. It has never sought to spread its tenets like the Abrahamic religions have. And the reason for this is because, well, I would argue the reason for this is because it wasn't insecure enough to do so. You have to realize that paganism has never been an ideology. It's not an ideology. It's just the way that things are. It's the natural way. Our ancestors likely could not have pointed to a single moment in time when their way of life began, unlike with the Abrahamic religions, where there is a specific date in relatively recent, you know, history or relatively recent antiquity, where we can point to a certain date and say that is when Christianity began, that is when Judaism began, that is when Islam began. as far as we know, our fundamental ways have always been. So it's not a man-made, you know, we can say with some confidence that it's not a man-made ideology. It didn't spring from the minds of men. It wasn't given to us by, you know, a burning bush or whatever. It wasn't, you know, written down by the hand of God. It just was the eternal way that we always knew, that our ancestors always knew. Are we judged? Are we judged in the same way that the Abrahamic God judges his children? Yes and no. I mean, we seek to impress our gods, our goddesses, and our ancestors. but we know that they themselves are not infallible. In fact, their flaws, which are encoded in various myths, are specifically there to help us to avoid the same pitfalls. You know, it gives a more balanced view of human nature, I would say. So yes, while we seek to impress our gods and goddesses and ancestors, we don't feel that we are ultimately judged by them alone. Most of us do actually believe in an ultimate creative force, which is above the gods and goddesses. So, what are the gods? Well, the Greek poet of the pagan era, Hesiod, he described the gods as beings of the first age who never died, who would continue to exist as humankind's invisible guardians. This is pretty close to my own belief, which is that the gods and goddesses are our distant ancestors who were elevated through mighty deeds and noble deeds. They were elevated in the afterlife and are at a higher spiritual level of attainment and evolution than we are. So we do appeal to them. We attempt to ally ourselves with them and seek them as allies because of what they've learnt, because of the power that they've gained and that they might share with us. We, in a sense, when Christianity arrived, the Christian saints were often essentially gods, pagan gods who were Christianized in the form of saints. So for those of you who might be Christian, you could think of it in a similar way. You have, you know, your God, you have the saints who are between you and your God, and then you have you, and you seek to be more like your saints. You admire your saints. You show them your respect, and it's the same basic principle with our gods and goddesses. And I have to emphasize here that much of what I'm saying is my own personal opinion, my own interpretation of paganism. I'm not speaking for all pagans here. And no doubt there will be pagans out there who disagree with me, especially as I get to my next point, which is, are the gods conscious? Are they external? Are they internal? Or are they simply symbolic? The kind of modern materialist secular mind, if it entertains paganism at all, will generally view the pagan gods as symbolic of the forces of nature. This is not my belief, or rather I should say it's not my entire belief, because I believe that as we reach higher levels of spiritual evolution, we begin to manifest in a variety of ways, not in one singular way. So, for example, as far as I'm concerned, a god may be both a conscious external entity as well as something which manifests through the forces of nature. So if we take Thunor, for example, who is obviously linked with thunder and storms, just because Thunor might be symbolic of that force of nature, that doesn't necessarily mean that he is not also an individual consciousness which we can build a relationship with, who exists externally, whether we honour him or not, whether we give him our attention or not. And that's my belief. Different pantheons. So yes, of course, we have the Celtic, the Germanic, we have the Hellenic, the Roman, and then even within the Germanic region, we have slightly different names for the gods. You know, we have Odin in Scandinavia and Woden in England and Wotan in Germany. These different pantheons, what is the relationship between them? You're going to get different views from different pagans on this. I do believe that they are the same. For example, Mercury of the Roman pantheon is Woden. They have mainly the same characteristics. And I think what we're looking at here is simply a different cultural linguistic veneer which has been placed upon the same objective truth, which the same existent being who belongs to both the Romanic, the Hellenic, and the Germanic people. So why do Why does it seem that sometimes the gods, there's a different pecking order? Why is it that sometimes we see Tyr as the head god and other times it's Woden? You have to realize that in different regions, in different nations, among different tribes, at different times throughout history, different gods have held different importance for different people. This is because, you know, if you're living through a time when you particularly are seeking, you know, peace and good harvest, then you might elevate Frey to, you know, as your chosen primary deity who you worship and honor. Whereas during a time of war, you might want Woden. You might honor Woden more than any other. If you are sailing the seas, perhaps, then it could be that Thor or Thunor is more important to you for reasons which I don't have time to go into in this episode. Do we reject Christ? Well, this will differ, and you'll probably get a different answer for almost every different pagan that you speak to. My own answer to that would be no, we don't necessarily reject Christ, because firstly, Christos is a pre-Judaic deity, a pre-Judaic aeon of the Greek culture. Meaning, you know, the anointed. Secondly, there's no, because we are a polytheistic religion, there's no reason why we couldn't acknowledge the existence of the Judaic gods. We may not accept them as our own. We may view them as foreign. We may even view them as, anathema to our own tradition. But we could acknowledge their existence. As for Christ specifically, there are some tangible similarities between Christ and various of our own pagan gods who go by different names. I see no reason why we can't focus on those commonalities. And I don't mean there that we bring in aspects of Christianity into, or Judeo-Christianity into, the pagan tradition. I often say that Christianity is Judaism plus paganism, European paganism, that is. So if you were to take the Judaism out of it, it would simply be European paganism. So there is certainly a crossover there. So do we have symbols? You know, obviously Christians wear the cross, the crucifix. Absolutely. You know, and I'm speaking here mostly from my English Anglo-Saxon perspective. But of course, we have symbols such as the runes. We have Mjolnir, the hammer that is associated with Thunor. We have the Valknut, which is associated with Woden. We have the Filfot, which is, you know, otherwise known as the swastika in other parts of the world. So we have various symbols which, when connected with, can really bind us to our indigenous culture and awaken something within us which we may not even have known was there. Much like the biblical Christianity, of course, we have wisdom and teachings. One phrase that I've always been drawn to with heathenry is, I believe it's Old Norse, it's a phrase, "Rein til runa," and it means seek the mysteries. I have a patch with this on my jacket, and this is something I live by, because I have always been fascinated by the fact that there are more mysteries in this lifetime than we could ever solve, certainly on an individual basis. And I adore that. I adore that fact, the fact that I could spend the rest of my life seeking mysteries that I'll never know the answer to. Because if I were to know the answers to the universe next week, what opportunity for growth would I have left for the rest of my life? We have the Havamal, which is the words of the Higher One. These are generally accepted to be the kind of gnomic wisdoms of Woden. And, you know, I defy any Christian or atheist to read the Havamal and not find profound wisdom in these verses. These are lessons for life. They're rules for primarily for men on how to conduct oneself. And again, when I first discovered the Havamal in my early 20s, it was a profound realization for me. You know, I had no idea that my own native indigenous tradition had these ready-made teachings like the Bible does. This is not something that you're taught, and it's not something that you know unless you dig into it. Merely studying the runes can unveil so much wisdom. Reading the rune poems of, you know, the Anglo-Saxon rune poem, the Norwegian rune poem, the Icelandic rune poem, simply the Danish rune poem, simply reading those will, it will certainly get the brain ticking along. And meditating upon the shapes and the sounds of the runes, and combining that with what you know of the meaning of them, simply doing, you know, you're not being presented with huge tomes worth of texts on these symbols. The symbols themselves and the sounds will tell you a great deal about the nature of this existence. Morality. This is something that is often asked of pagans. Do we have a moral system? We do, but it's not the same as the Christian moral system. Our morality is essentially our natural instinct, the natural instinct of an uncorrupted mind. So I and probably many pagans believe that prior to the arrival of foreign ideologies, we and our folk had an uncorrupted mind, an uncorrupted folk soul. And as such, we had a natural morality that was intact. We didn't need to be told how to behave. It was self-evident how a man of pre-Christian England should behave, how he should behave to his elders, how he should teach his youngers, how he should treat his wife, and vice versa, how a wife should treat his man and her children. What the main difference between pagan morality and Christian morality is that our morality is not universal. It's less objective, more subjective. It's about what's good for your tribe. That said, we hold the natural order to be sacred, and we instinctively know what fits with the natural order and what doesn't. And we don't defy it. We do not defy the natural order. And anyone who does defy the natural order, who brings harm or shame upon their folk, that is against our morality. And it is dealt with accordingly. Now, I think probably the key difference between paganism and Christianity, the thing that I would argue is single most in terms of reasoning as to why I believe that if you are of European ancestry, that you should turn to paganism, or indeed if you're of non-European ancestry, if you're of Native American, North or South, if you're of Polynesian ancestry, if you're of Aboriginal Australian ancestry, you should turn to your native ways. That's what paganism is, heathenry. I'm using pagan here as a kind of umbrella term, but paganism is our native ways. That is, as far as we know, the ways of our ancestors unhindered, uncorrupted, uninfluenced by foreign foreign forces. Now, the landscapes of Britain are literally strewn with reminders of paganism, whether that be the post-invasion Anglo-Saxon and Norse invasion, such as place names dedicated to Woden or Thunor, or whether it be megalithic sites which are pre-Anglo-Saxon, or even megalithic sites which were renamed to link them with the latter Anglo-Saxon traditions, such as Wayland Smithy. Our landscape is strewn with these things. And that is an extremely powerful realization. For someone who has a strong link to their folk and to their land, and who is seeking something uncorrupted, something that wasn't handed down to them by authority, and certainly not a foreign authority, that's powerful. To be able to walk the lands that you live upon, that your forefathers and countless forefathers before you walked upon, and foremothers, to walk those lands and see the signs of their worldview, their spiritual worldview, extending back thousands of years. Of course, we have signs of Christianity here, extending back perhaps at most 1,500 years. But we know, and any Christian who is honest with themselves knows, that these are essentially foreign imports, or certainly the Judaic aspects of them are foreign imports. You know, we can argue that things like the Celtic cross are actually of pagan origin, of course. Symbols of the Trinity are likely of pagan origin. Of course, we have Easter, who is an Anglo-Saxon goddess of the start of the summer, the dawn, which has been taken over, co-opted by Christianity, as well as Christmas, which of course was originally known as Yule. For rebellious types like myself, and perhaps you listening, paganism is a religion which, as far as we know, was not forced down the throats of our people. It has no political agenda. It arose naturally from our folk. And for me, there's an enormous value in that. In fact, I would say that that's priceless. To have that confidence in your indigenous tradition, to know that it's something which has always been there in some form or other, where the fundamentals have essentially been the same since time immemorial, and those fundamental beliefs have been marked across the landscape, and countless more of your ancestors followed those ways than followed the ways of the Middle Eastern religion Christianity. That's incredibly powerful and empowering. It gives you a great sense of power and pride in who you are. It makes it okay to be an indigenous Englishman or Brit or European in general. It makes it okay to be those things because we do actually have an indigenous ethnic folk way, just like all other ethnic groups of the world. We have nothing to be ashamed of. We're not so lacking in our own ways that we've had to go shopping elsewhere for them. We have them ready-made for us here. We just need to return to them. I've always believed that what is timeless is truthful. So the more timeless something feels and seems to be, the likelihood is that there is more truth in that than there is in something which is less timeless. I mentioned the author Graham Hancock earlier, and his book, Fingerprints of the Gods, posits that there was actually a highly advanced civilization in at least 10,500 BC that we are not aware of, that we're not taught about. And in fact, that this civilization, or its high priest certainly, may have been wiser and more capable than we are today. Again, this had a profound effect on me, and my worldview is largely informed by the belief that the further back in time you go, the more wisdom, strength, and beauty there probably was among our people, especially when you factor in the yugas of Vedic tradition And we're supposedly in the Kali Yuga now, the lowest of the ages, or the lead age of the Greek tradition, I believe. So it follows that there has been a decline in human capability and knowledge to the point where we are now. And that, in fact, what we need to do is look as far back in history as we can to find the truth about our existence, about nature, about how we are supposed to live upon this earth, about our relationship to the spirit world, about what happens after our earthly life comes to an end. So that's what I believe we should be seeking to do, looking as far back as possible as we can, balanced, of course, with what's available. So, you know, if, for example, I can look back to my Germanic ancestors, because we have quite a bit of lore available to us from that era. Europeans, of course, go back to a pre-Germanic time, when we were all speaking a proto-Germanic language, or a basic Sanskrit Indo-European language. And of course, we probably would have called the gods and goddesses different things at that time. But the fundamental aspects of our worldview are, as far as we know, the same. The runes and symbols appear to us on a genetic level. You may have found this, even if you haven't delved very far into paganism yet yourself, even if you're a beginner and you're looking to know where to start, you have probably found that just that simply the sight of certain runes or bind runes or other symbols that are associated with paganism, it stirs something within you. I certainly found that. And, you know, a couple of years ago, my mother found an old school class project that I did when I was in primary school, which in Britain is, that's age about 5 to 11. So at some point during those years, I did this project on the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings. And I evidently spent a long time focusing on the runes, you know, because about half of the project was made up of drawings of the Futhark, you know, runic symbols. And so clearly there was something that spoke to me, something that fascinated me, even at that age, about these symbols. And I do believe that they awaken something within you. You know, I mentioned earlier that I found paganism primarily through black metal and through Burzum. So it was probably simply the sight of those symbols and those runes being used to accompany such powerful, visceral music, which awoke something within me, which made me want to investigate further. And perhaps that's how you began as well. Perhaps that's what compelled you to look further. By nature, it's an instinctual religion. We don't need to have things explained to us, such as why certain things should only be done on certain days, or why only eat certain types of animal on certain days. If we have those kind of rules, they're very instinctive. They make sense to us. There's no conflict as there is within Christianity. Probably one of the reasons that I and perhaps yourself rejected Christianity was because so much of it just didn't make sense to us. And why would it? Those rules and those the mindsets inherent within Christianity come from a Middle Eastern climate. They come from a different culture. They come from different landscapes which are unfamiliar to us. Whereas our pagan origins, our pagan ways, come from the very landscapes upon which we still dwell. They come from familiar lands. They come from a familiar culture. They are tied to a familiar language. There really is no conflict. It's a very instinctive way of being. And that's because it is ancestral. Now, there may be people out there who are not of European ancestry who attempt to connect with the European folkish pagan ways. Some of them may be successful in some ways, but that's if they are, it's probably because they have lived within an English-speaking Western society and have, to all intents and purposes, become psychologically anglicized. If they were, you know, if there is someone of full African origin and they were still living in Africa, speaking the language of their ancestors among their folk, then I very much doubt that any aspect of European paganism would make sense to them. So it's only because of the European influence upon people from other parts of the world that they are even able to engage with our ways. I've been speaking now for about 45 minutes. I don't know if I'm going to get through all of the notes that I have, so I'll continue for a little bit longer, but it may be that there'll have to be a part two to this, which I hope is okay with you. So, the next notes I've got. Responsibility and self-betterment. Now, this is one of the strengths, I believe, of paganism over Christianity. Within the pagan worldview, we have this this enormously potent belief in personal responsibility. As a Christian, you can live a life of sin. After all, you are deemed to be a sinner by default. But you can live a life of sin, but if you repent in your dying breaths, then you will be received into heaven. That's not the case with paganism, with heathenry. The actions and worth of your life, of your existence, are, I believe, balanced. And this is something which is probably expressed best in the Egyptian worldview. Forgive me if I don't know the specifics, but when you die, when an Egyptian died, he believed or she believed that their heart was weighed upon a set of scales. Their good deeds and their bad deeds were weighed against one another to see if they were eligible to traverse the Duat, the road to the land of the gods, which some believe to be the Milky Way, I believe. But their worth, their actions were measured. So in that sense, we are judged, but it's not necessarily by a specific deity. We seek to live a life of virtue and honor and courage and creativity and productivity, because when we come to that final moment, we believe that our entire existence is looked back upon for its goodness, and by that, as well as by the courage shown during our final moments, we are designated an afterlife destination. Willing sacrifice is the path to godhood. Someone else, i.e. Jesus Christ, doing it for us is not good enough. So whilst Christians outsource their sacrifice to their God, we don't do that. We take responsibility for ourselves. The gods push with us, not for us, as my good friend Phil from Mimes Brunner likes to say. And that's a powerful phrase, because as a Christian or a follower of the Abrahamic faiths, you may wish for something to happen. You may wish for victory in battle. You may pray to your God and you may demand that he give you that victory without any effort. Indeed, the whole of Christianity is based on the idea of a savior. And in fact, Judaism, these are based on the idea of a savior who will come and deliver mankind from his sins. We take more personal responsibility than that. We are aided by the gods and goddesses, of course, but they don't help us unless we help ourselves. There's an excellent quote by Julius Evola, which I wanted to mention here, which is, "The blood of the heroes is closer to God than the ink of the philosophers and the prayers of the faithful." So we value action more so than mere piety. Being locked up in a monastery, praying, every hour on the hour, and demonstrating your piety that way, is nowhere near as, demonstrative of your worth as action of putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak, of being courageous in the face of adversity, of seeking struggle even, to prove how worthy you are of your gods and ancestors. That said, in the pagan tradition, many believe that we do actually have a saviour aspect. We have, in the Germanic tradition, we have Widar. Celtic Brythonic tradition believes that Arthur will arise when Britain is in a time of great need. I believe there's a similar belief for Germany with Germania with King Barbarossa. So we do have these similar ideas, and these are probably the origins of the Jesus Christ mythos, or they certainly help to influence it. But despite these things, the pagan mindset has never been to sit back and wait for these things to arrive. That's never been how we do things. The afterlife. Yes, we do have a belief in the afterlife. And of course we do. We find graves packed with grave goods. We have deep ancestor worship. These are things which as pagans we would not be doing unless we believed that those who die, and particularly those who show themselves to have great worth, actually do live on in some form after death, after material death. So yes, we do believe in an afterlife. It's not as simple as heaven or hell or purgatory. We have a variety of afterlife destinations. Traditionally, it's believed that to die in battle is, you may have been chosen by Woden to go to Valhalla, or perhaps by Freyr to go to Folkvang. There are other destinations as well, such as Helheim. Other places where we, depending on the nature of our end and the way that we lived our lives, place, and perhaps also the place that we choose to go, there are a variety of places, and reincarnation is an important aspect of these, of our belief. So there's not, it's not transcendental or reincarnation. I believe personally that both are a feature of the pagan cosmology, that we may reincarnate while we still have lessons to learn, or perhaps that we may ascend to another level of evolution, of spiritual evolution, once we are ready to do so. Texts and community. Now, a common criticism of paganism, particularly by Christians, is that we don't have reliable set of scriptures like the Bible. It's true that our scriptures are more fragmented, we admit that they were written. Some of our more important ones, such as the Poetic Edda and the Prose Edda, which was based upon it, were written probably relatively recently, probably even after the arrival of Christianity. But because of how these things tie into various artifacts, which we know to be much more ancient, because of carvings and idols and jewellery, which dates back much further, we can paint a more comprehensive picture of the worldview that our ancestors had. They were not they didn't prize a literary tradition. And this is something that I will probably go into in another episode of the podcast, as to why our ancestors were, to all intents and purposes, illiterate or not literate in the same way that we are. And spoiler, it's not because they were stupid. In fact, it's because they were far more astute than we are today. But that's for another time. We have the Elder Edda, the Poetic Edda, and the Younger Edda, the Prose Edda, as our texts. We have the rune poems. We have the runes themselves, which can teach us so much. We have the sagas, which tell of pre-Christian times. And we have the observations of the likes of Bede and Tacitus, or Tacitus, as well, to inform us of what our ancestors did actually believe. Community, as to, you know, whether we have a community. Yes, with Christianity, of course, you have a local church, a local parish. There's a ready-made community there that has probably been in existence for hundreds of years. It's never mentioned that that only exists in place of pagan temples because of a campaign of you know, burning down, destroying, and defacing pagan idols under the instruction of the, you know, biblical scriptures. But nevertheless, it is true that there is a ready-made community within the Christian faith. We have that within the pagan faith, but you have to work harder to find it. Pagans are more, we're more atomized, we're more scattered. When we do come together, we often have to come from further afield to meet with one another. We generally cannot meet as regularly as once a week, but it's good enough that we meet at the high holy tides. We honor the important festivals. Other than that, we may have family hearths. We may have local hearths, which we are able to meet with regularly. And at this current point in time, we use the internet to uphold the community that we do have. And that community is growing. And hopefully, as more people realize that paganism is the way forward, that community will grow. And it will become easier for people to have local community that rivals that of the Christian church. When I attend moots with my heathen group, it's a profound experience for me and for my family. It's nourishing, it's energizing, it recharges me. And I'm happy to travel, you know, several hours if need be, to meet with those people, to spend time with them. And often we'll camp together for a weekend. We'll spend longer than just a couple of hours on a Sunday morning together. And the time we spend together is meaningful. And because we are defying the kind of current, the mainstream current that around us, we are generally of a good quality. We're people who can think for ourselves, who mean it when we engage in rites and when we have conversations with people. We speak of meaningful things. That, you know, in addition to that, we do have a tradition of personal responsibility. So we may practice alone most of the time. We may blot alone or just with our family on a more regular basis. And there's nothing wrong with that. So we have a good balance of, you know, communal ways and individual ways, individual practice. So for the final section that I'd like to talk on now, before closing off this episode, is what have I gained personally from my 15 years or so as a heathen? Firstly, as I keep mentioning, a sense of personal responsibility. It has made me a better man, made me a more responsible, dutiful man, to realise that my destiny is primarily in my hands. And even if weird, which is something, a concept which I'll have to go into in another episode, even if weird determines that I have certain options because of choices I've made in the past, I nevertheless do have options and I can steer my own rudder. I am to be judged on my own worth, not simply some words that I utter in my dying breaths. The sense of power and strength and pride that comes from that is indescribable. I've gained great insight through studying the runes and the texts. I have used that insight. I've used my creative efforts with my music under the name Walkensman. I've used that as an opportunity to explore the mysteries that are inherent within my tradition. For example, the last Walkensman album was called Fire in the White Stone, and the concept of this album arises from my explorations into runic lore, as well as Arthurian lore. This sense of wonder is something that I wouldn't have had as an atheist or even as a Christian. There are aspects of mystic Christianity which can give you that same sense of wonder, but it's more innate, I would say, within paganism. A profound bond with nature. I mean, this is something that I believe that I had already, and it's probably one of the reasons why I did find paganism, is because I did already have this deep respect and love for the natural world. That, you know, walking amongst the woods alone, or staring up at the starry skies, looking out, you know, upon a lightning storm on the horizon at sea or something like that, these kind of experiences which I've had, I can imagine that if I were a Christian, I'd be looking at those things simply as God's handiwork. So everything comes back to this, the mind of this single deity, as opposed to being a rich tapestry which has kind of evolved in a more beautiful way, I would say, in a more fluent way, a more objective way. That's something which I think a lot of pagans, I mean, that's, if you ask most pagans what they value, they will say the natural world. And my bond with the natural world has only been deepened as a pagan, as a heathen. Blots, which this is what we call prayer, blots. And this is something I'll have to go into in the next episode, where I'll talk more about how to be a pagan. Yes, my prayers have been answered. My blots have been answered. There have been numerous times where I have been financially on the brink of destitution, where I've had no work coming in as a self-employed person. I have performed a blot to the gods and ancestors, and I've found that literally within the next 2 or 3 days, work comes in, and something completely unexpected, something which I can only account for by my having appealed to the gods and ancestors. There are other examples, but some of them are quite personal, so I don't want to get into them. And obviously, these are just personal anecdotes which can't be verified. So, you know, you can take them or leave them. But these are things which, and I believe that I am someone who has quite a scientific, empirical mind. It's been difficult for me to accept these things, but nevertheless, I can't deny them. Meanings in signs and dreams. I've had some profound dreams over the course of being a heathen, which I mean, deeply profound, which stay with me today and inform decisions today. For example, in 2013, I had an extremely vivid dream which involved two giant swans. I won't go into the details of the dream, but what happened in that dream features in the story that I wrote to accompany my last Walkinsman album, Fire in the White Stone. That was also just a couple of months later after that dream, I began that very project, Walkinsman. And I think there was a connection between those two events. I don't think that I would have found my voice, so to speak, found my confidence to embark on what was quite a daunting musical project at the time if I hadn't have had that dream. And that's just one example. And generally just a sense of wonder and opportunity in life. You know, I see life not as something preordained. I don't see this realm as being under the control of Satan. Human society is under the influence of some dark forces, but we have to remember that that is human society only. The world exists beyond the human perspective. And I think that that's a profound an important difference between Christianity and paganism. Christianity would say that because man is under the spell of darkness, that means the world is under the control of darkness. As pagans, we would say that no matter how ensorcelled humanity currently is in our current times by these dark forces, we might refer to them as Aetons or Frost Giants or agents of Loki, or, you know, there are various different views which I can't go into now. But even if we accept that humanity is under a spell, we know that the world as a whole, the wider world, the natural world, is as perfect and natural as it has ever been. Obviously, it's being blighted and polluted in certain areas, but this is momentary in the grand scheme of things. And will be overcome and will heal. There's so much yet to discover, and this is, and not just in this episode and not in this topic, but I mean, as a pagan, once you embark on this path, there are an endless amount of mysteries, endless number of mysteries to discover, to explore. We don't outsource the understanding of these mysteries to a single god or a single scripture and say, this has all of the answers. We know that we are part of the story. It's a living tradition, and that story is still being written. As an outsider to Christianity, it seems to me like Christians believe that their story is already written. It has already been written, and all that needs to happen now is for it to play out. That's not so with paganism. We have a much more opportunistic, hopeful outlook for the future. And we believe that we can literally move mountains, you know, and we, well, not literally, metaphorically, but we will do that with a sense of courage, empowerment, and pride. So in this episode, I did mean to get to how to be a pagan. Unfortunately, I think it's gone on a bit too long, so that will have to wait for episode 2, and I hope you don't mind waiting with me. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. What I'd like to do as a regular feature of the Fergan podcast is I recently got a copy of the Exeter Riddle Book, which is an old Anglo-Saxon collection of riddles. So I thought at the end of each episode, what I might do is to read you a riddle, and then in the following episode, I can reveal what the answer to that riddle is. Here we go for the first one. Number one, which man is so sharp and so quick-witted as to guess who goads me on my journey? When I get up angry, at times awesome, when I roar loudly and rampage over the land, sometimes causing havoc, when I burn houses and ransack palaces, smoke rises, ashen over roofs. There is a din on earth, and men die violently when I shake the forest, the flourishing trees and fell timber. I, with my roof of water, driven far and wide, in pursuit of vengeance by the powers above. I carry on my back what once covered every man, body and soul submerged, together in the water. Say what conceals me, or what I, who bear this burden, am called. Thank you, and I appreciate you listening to this first episode of the Fergan podcast. And as I say, check out my website, Fergan, FYRGEN.com, for more links and information about what I'm up to. And if you happen to not be already following my Telegram channel, please do. And I look forward to speaking to all of you in the next episode.